This is the sound of football.
And on this week's Sound of Football, we look at Darren Bent and ask, is he the bargain buy of the season? And more to the point, why on earth did Tottenham let him go? We take a wider view at the progress Sunderland are making under Steve Bruce. Plus, there's an assessment of Liverpool's free scoring run in the league, along with a preview of all the action to come over the next few days in Europe. That's all on this week's Sound of Football. Welcome to the Sound of Football. I'm Chris Oakley, and joining me here once again for show number 8 is my good friend from the Onion Bag and some people on the pitch, Terry DeFellin. Welcome, Ball Tell.
Hello.
Once again, no Graham Sibley. What can you do? I mean, you give some people a chance to have a bit of time off, and next thing you know, they're acting like James Richardson swanning around in Italy, I suppose. But anyway, I'm sure he'll be back for next week, and we'll manage without him for one more week, I think. But anyway, back to the business of football, and another high-scoring week in the Premier League. I mean, what have we got here? Liverpool scored 6, Tottenham scored 5, Sunderland scored 5. I've actually done a bit of background research, the way one does, and I've worked out that in the sort of 5 main leagues in Europe, i.e. England, France, Spain, Germany, Italy, out of all the opening games, the Premier League is at the moment providing the most number of goals per game on average. Actually, 2.95 I've worked out, which is just ahead of La Liga and the Bundesliga, so that's all to the good, I suppose. What say we kick off by looking at one of those high-scoring games, actually. Sunderland against Wolves, 5-2 was a score there. And yes. Much to sort of look on as far as that particular game's concerned. What's your feelings, having seen the game, Tell, in terms of the direction, say, that Sunderland are going in particularly?
Well, it was always, they were always going to improve under Steve Bruce. He's an excellent manager, and I thought the signing of Darren Bent was inspired. Certainly the bargain of the season. I mean, given that he cost, what was it, in excess of £10 million.
About £10 million, yeah.
When he moved to Spurs, I think he cost more than Thierry Henry cost that season to go to Barcelona. I mean, I know Darren Bent is a younger player, but. Nevertheless, that's quite large amount of money. I mean, he probably wasn't worth that much, in fairness. But, I mean, just goes to show you what a couple of seasons at Spurs can do to ruin your career. and a player who, at Charlton, would probably have been looking only upwards and thinking, well, you know, okay, yeah, Tottenham's a good one, but who knows, maybe one of the big four, not without question. And the next thing he knows, he's having a bad time at Spurs, and is in the frame for clubs like Sunderland and Stoke, and Hull was the other one, wasn't he? But,
I mean,
it's an absolute steal, because he was always going to score goals. I mean, he's a 20-goal season striker. You just have to play him.
Yes.
I mean, it's a colossal no-brainer, and it was great for Steve Bruce and Sunderland that they've got him, and he's now. I mean, he's scored. Is it 5 or 6 goals?
He's scored seven games so far this season.
Okay, so he's averaging a goal a game. I mean, he's almost certainly going to score 20 goals this season. He will score the goals needed in order to keep Sunderland in this division quite comfortably. Now, how much is that worth? I mean, to a club. I mean, it's worth more than what they paid for him. So, you know, an absolute snip and a fantastic player. Sunderland's new Kevin Phillips, isn't he?
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, I suppose, without wishing to sound sort of derogatory for Sunderland being in the position they're in, I guess first priority is staying in the Premier League. And as you say, the number of goals he's likely to get you will almost certainly assure you of that. And there's even, I think, I hear one or two people murmuring from this distance away from up north that they're even possibly at this early stage looking at maybe a Europa League spot. I think that might be perhaps getting a bit too carried away, but at the very least, Darren Bent's goals will certainly keep them in the Premier League. I mean, looking back at his previous career, the evidence is there, as you say, in terms of making a good purchase. He's averaged more or less a goal every other game when he's been at Charlton and Ipswich and Spurs. So,
and Spurs,
what's not to kind of be enthused about, really?
Yeah, I mean, he didn't actually play. I mean, there were times when he played really quite poorly at Spurs. I mean, you imagine if you're having a really bad time somewhere, it's not going to be too good for your game. And yet, he still scored 25 in 43 games.
Yeah.
And the guy is, he's an absolute machine. I genuinely don't know why Harry Redknapp wanted to get rid of him. I mean, I suppose he has his own guys, isn't he? I mean, he wanted Jermaine Defoe in, and I guess Jermaine Defoe is fair enough. I mean, if that's who he wanted. But, I mean, blimey, you know, you've got to, I suppose if you don't get on with somebody maybe on the training ground, if he's not your guy, then I guess you've got to get rid of him. But, I mean, blimey, I mean, what a lot of goals that guy has scored. I mean, at the moment Spurs don't seem to be missing him at all, but fantastic signing for Sunderland, and in conjunction with Kenwyn Jones, I mean, the two, I think, are looking to set up an excellent partnership. And while Jones won't score as many goals, I mean, he may well be the sort of, you know, he's in that, there's this popular, very sort of like large target striker, Emil Heskey, Carlton Cole type figure that's sort of doing, you know, that's very popular at the moment in football lore. And he seems to, you know, Bruce seems to have happened upon an excellent potential strike partnership of those two. And it will serve Sunderland extremely well, and they looked a decent side, and they knocked it about a bit, and they were tough, and they looked like a side well worth watching, and in a very watchable game, in fairness, against Wolves.
Absolutely, yeah, I agree. Sunderland are still a little bit sort of probably too hit and miss to be looking at Europa League place, but nonetheless, when they're on their form. If they're having a good day, then they do play some tremendous stuff. They're very tenacious. Interesting that they've got now Darren Bent there, as well as Kenwyn Jones, who obviously pops up from time to time with a few goals of his own. I'd stop short perhaps of saying that they're like a partnership as such. I don't think they're kind of like a, you know, two men up front kind of working with each other sort of partnership. Because I think but the interesting thing is I think that they kind of dovetail each other in terms of their style. You've got Darren Bent, who tends to score a lot of goals, I think sort of getting into the box and scoring from fairly close range. You've got Kenwyn Jones, who just hits the ball from wherever he happens to get it, like from long range and whatever. And both of them are very good, you know, connecting with corners and heading goals in as well. So they kind of work a little bit independently of each other on the pitch, I think. But it's a good sort of two-pronged source of goals to have. And I think that will stand them in good stead as much as anything else.
So lots of dimension in their attack as well, with the variety of play and options that both players provide their team. I'd certainly agree with your assessment of the sort of like relationship, if you like, between the two. They got into a bit of trouble, didn't they? Because Darren Bent, for the second penalty, and it was only 1-0 at the time, Darren Bent gave the ball to Kenwyn Jones at his request so that Jones could get off the mark, which is a wonderful moment of camaraderie, and obviously worked out fine. But Steve Bruce was...
He's not happy, is he?
No, and you can kind of see why, because there is a lot at stake in the Premier League, and they're not so well off, Sunderland, that they can afford luxuries like that.
Playing games like that, yes. I think, as Steve Bruce said, it all very well if there'd been sort of five or six goals up and yes, after you clawed sort of thing, but as it is...
Indeed. Having said that, it does demonstrate, you know, that the pair obviously are quite close, perhaps Darren Bent feels, perhaps unwisely on this occasion, but felt that it's in the broader interests of both himself and his teammates that Jones is off the mark and scoring goals, and so one could debate whether or not that was a good thing or not. But it's a good thing if it works. It's a bad thing if it doesn't, I guess, is the thing. And I guess if you're Steve Bruce, you're thinking, you know, I'd rather you just give it to the top scorer, give it to the main man to score where you know he's going to, or most likely to score.
Yes, I suspect we won't be seeing too many incidents like that coming up in future games for Sunderland. Talking of basically sort of goal scoring sources and such like, Kieran Richardson and the back pass that posed a few problems, of course. For those people that didn't see it, with the score at 2-1 to Sunderland, Kieran Richardson decided to execute what can only be probably described as an interesting back pass to Craig Gordon in the Sunderland goal. It sort of sent him far outside his comfort zone, shall we say, and he had to go scrabbling for it and decided to pick the ball up, if I remember rightly, didn't he? So it constituted a back pass, which in due course led to one of those odd direct free kicks from sort of like 6 yards off the goal line, actually inside the penalty area. I don't suppose Kieran Richardson will be looking back on that with any great sense of pride, but you learn by these things, I suppose. And always good to see 10 players on the goal line trying to defend one of those kind of free kicks. It's just absolute chaos, isn't it, really?
Absolutely. And, and probably a lesson that that Richardson is not a fullback.
No, indeed, quite. Yes, I thought Colton Cole had sort of made his mark with those kind of back passes, but obviously he's got some competition now. So there we are. So and that led to 2-2. And talking about Wolves, we haven't really mentioned Wolves yet, but they're showing a lot of fight as well. I mean, they're down in 16th position now in the table, which, to be honest, is perhaps there or thereabouts for where people would expect them to be, if not now, then at the end of the season. But they're showing a lot of fight to me, and I think Mick McCarthy's got them sort of pointed in the right direction, and they might not sort of be sort of finishing top half of the table, but I suspect they'll finish clear of the bottom three. What do you reckon, Tom?
Yeah, I'd agree with that. They've got some decent players in Michael Kightley and Doyle, I like as well, and Keogh, I like their forwards. Mancian is slightly flawed and raw, but I still suspect probably over the course of a season will do more good than harm. And they just look well organised and committed and belief. They believe. I think they believe as well. And not, it would seem, as sort of leaky at the back as say Burnley are, who are getting thrashed quite badly, aren't they? When they play badly, they don't half get mullered. But obviously, from Burnley's point of view, their home form is the key. But nevertheless, I mean, if they can, if Wolves can keep a good record at the Molyneux, and you know, maybe pick up some away points from teams around them, then absolutely, I think they're well in with a chance, which will be good. I'll be pleased for Mick McCarthy, because he's taken a lot of stick as a Premier League manager at Sunderland, and it would be nice to see him come through. And they're a good club, the Wolves, and you know.
Yes, indeed. Yes, friend of mine supports Wolves. Actually, it was always many years ago when he and I used to work together. It was always a bit of a sort of touchy kind of thing if you sort of brought up Wolves in the conversation, and he'd be like, don't mention Wolves, because they'd always be struggling one way or the other, either in the Premier League or in the Championship or whatever. They've always kind of struggled a bit, but I suspect he'll be a bit happier about life these days. I think they're sort of they're set for a good season one way or the other. So, and as you say, all the time we've got teams like Hull and Burnley coming up with some, well, perhaps more Hull than Burnley, as we said, sort of coming up with poor results, then Wolves could well be here for another season, I should think, in the Premier League.
Absolutely.
Sorry, were you going to say something there,
Tom? No, I was going to say absolutely, but speaking of Hull.
Yes, well, Hull, we're, I think, segueing very nicely into the next high-scoring game of the weekend, the 6-1 thrashing of Liverpool over Hull. And, well, I mean, Hull now sort of in the bottom two, and again, they're trying, but I just sense that there's no kind of depth there, really. But they, in all fairness, as I think Phil Brown said after the match at the weekend, that they were up against a very good Liverpool side. And I mean, what can you say about Torres? I mean, he's just relentless at the moment, isn't he? He's really on top form.
Yeah, he's an absolutely fantastic player. He started a little bit slowly, and I think I was a bit, I say worried, but I was, you know, I was wondering whether or not he was still sort of like recovering from the rigours of the Confederations Cup, and perhaps hadn't had that much time. He's played a hell of a lot of football, that guy, over the last few years, because his summers have been occupied by international football. And I wonder whether or not perhaps he had wasn't quite in the best condition at the beginning of the season, but he certainly is now. I mean, it's all going well for him at the moment, and everything he just touches the ball, and it's just all absolutely spot on for him. He can go round players, he can score. I listened to David Pleat on the radio the other day, and well, he raised the point, said that he doesn't have to beat the last man or get behind the last man to score goals. Fernando Torres, he can do it with men in front of him as well, as was demonstrated, you know, in front of the albeit rather hapless Hull defence. Absolute scourge of poor defending.
Well, I was going to say, I mean, without wishing to sort of take anything away from his achievements, I think the Hull defence kind of gave him every opportunity, didn't they?
They simply didn't know what to do. I mean, this is because he's that good. that, I mean, I think that, most... I mean, when he plays Manchester United, they will almost certainly have to just nullify
him out the game,
very
yeah.
physically, yeah, and you know, possibly using some of the more darker tactics, because if they square up to him in a straight fight, then you know he'll roast them alive, particularly Ferdinand, and particularly given Ferdinand's capacity for making mistakes, you wonder how that's going to go. But that's of course assuming that he's playing well, and if he's in this form and he continues his form all the way through till the end of the season and stays fit, then goodness me, it's all there for Liverpool. They really are on fire, aren't they? 22 yeah. goals in 7 games, and after we haven't been too, we've been quite disparaging about them on this podcast, but I think I have to say that they've shaken off any early yeah. season issues that they have or may have had, and goodness me, they look really, really good. Really good fun to watch as well.
Yeah, I mean, they're only 3 points now off the leaders, really. So I think we can safely say that Liverpool are back in the sort of driving seat that they'd want to be in at this stage of the season. Just, I mean, taking it from a different angle, actually. I mean, we're sort of talking about the fact that if Torres continues to play this well, even though he's had a very busy sort of summer, that, you know, Liverpool could find themselves challenging for the title perhaps at the end of this season. But what, I mean, do you think there's every possibility that he may end up kind of basically suffering from burnout prior to Spain playing in the World Cup next summer?
Well, as an Englishman, you kind of hope that would happen. my broad prediction for the winner of the World Cup is Brazil. And one of the reasons for that, aside from the Brazilian squad, is that the Spanish team may not have the pace to last all the way through the current European season. Many of them will be playing European football as well, Champions League football, and then going through into a World Cup.
Yeah.
I mean, I may well be wrong about that, but I'm kind of imagining that that's a very, very strong likelihood, and the concern would be for fans of the Spanish people and Spanish fans that their team won't be, and indeed fans of football, because I mean, you know, they were magnificent in Euro 2008, the Spanish, and you would love to see them do that again in the World Cup, and you'd hate to think that they've come through a difficult season and have become jaded by exhaustion and pressure and all of that before they come in there. But you know, we'll see how. I mean, they're pretty fit guys, and hopefully they'll go through. But it's a good point, Chris. Yes, it's a possibility that it may indeed impact on Spain's chances next year.
Yeah, and who'd be in Rafa Benitez's shoes? I mean, being wanting Spain to do well in the next World Cup, but I guess his sort of first priority has to be Liverpool. So he has to play Torres and whatever Spanish players, let's say, in the key games. There's no other way around it, really.
You wouldn't expect him to be kind to Steven Gerrard or to any of the English players playing in the Liverpool side for the purposes of. Because he plays in the English league, or for the purposes of England in the World Cup, so you shouldn't really expect him to show any kind of concessions to a Spanish player. I don't reckon managers see it like that.
No.
To be perfectly honest with you, I think that they support their team when the World Cup starts, but I think that that's the last thing on their mind.
But business is business. Yeah.
Absolutely, yeah, totally, and quite rightly so. You know, I mean, the club's paying his wages, and he's paying the players' wages. So you know, that's how it is. I mean, you know, I'm all for the predominance of international football, but you know, I mean, you've got to know which side your bread's buttered on, and you know, these guys have got to play for their clubs, you know, with absolutely everything that they've got, because that's what they're paid for.
Indeed.
And then they can think about the glory of the World Cup, you know, at the end of the season.
Quite. Another good player on form for my money is Yossi Benayoun. I'm not sure quite how many people sort of share my opinion on this, but I just feel, I mean, he's been playing staggeringly well since like at least halfway through last season. Whenever he's been involved, actually playing for Liverpool in any number of different games, he's been playing fantastically well. But he still seems to be brought on as an impact player. We've been talking about people like Defoe in the England setup and so on in the same sort of context, and one could even sort of talk about Peter Crouch for Tottenham in that way as well. He seems to be sort of playing well, but only being brought on sparingly, shall we say, and perhaps to good effect, some would argue. But Benayoun also seems to be in the same bracket, and I find that really frustrating. I mean, it's probably the whole sort of thing really with this, but. He seems to sort of come on and just make things happen, and he did against Hull on Saturday. I mean, I just it really frustrates. I just think he should be given more opportunity to start games. But there we go. Maybe that's just me not understanding the kind of tactical side of football and whatever. But
I'd like to see Ben Ayoun in a Bundesliga team. I'd like to see him in a team like Werder Bremen, because I think that they would play him from the start, and I think that he would just absolutely tear a hole in those Bundesliga defences. I would imagine that the convention is with Yossi Benayoun is that he is somewhat slight for a professional footballer, and perhaps starting from the beginning would lessen his impact, because he wouldn't be able to necessarily impose himself upon a fresh opposition, as opposed to perhaps later in the game when the opposition's had a chance to get a bit tired. And he can then come on and then start to impose himself a little bit more. That is, to be honest, the only reason that I can think of as to why he doesn't get picked. I mean, we're not managers and we don't know, but I mean, he certainly
sounds
looks like
feasible.
A player
yeah.
who should start from the beginning. But I just wonder whether or not perhaps there's concerns about his physical presence, that he works better against slightly worn down opposition, which is the same argument that I'm using for Jermaine Defoe. So maybe I'm just transposing one argument and imposing it on an entirely different player. So I don't know. It'd be interesting to see if the listeners have any views as to why Yossi Benayoun does not play from the start, you know, in the Premier League.
You know where to find us, folks. SOFpodcast@googlemail.com, or else leave us a comment on today's podcast post on the website, which
is
great. Sorry, go on.
Yeah, that would be great. Or you can, if you use SOF podcast hashtag on Twitter, if you're a Twitter fella, then you know, just it would be great to hear from you and perhaps get involved in a bit of a discussion about some of the crap that we talk on this podcast.
Excellent. Yes, please do feel free on that. So just tying up the loose ends on the whole Liverpool Hull thing. Liverpool are about to embark on actually a really tough spell of games here. I mean, if you look at the next six games they've got, they start off this week, midweek, with a Champions League game away to Fiorentina. They then play Chelsea away, again, without wishing to sound derogatory, slight respite by playing away to Sunderland, and then it's back into the Champions League against Lyon. Then it's Man U at home in the league, and then Arsenal away in the League Cup. So, I mean, to say that's a sort of demanding series of games is perhaps an understatement. And you can imagine perhaps Fernando Torres not playing against not playing in perhaps some of the competitions like the League Cup. I'm not quite sure really, but yeah, they've got to kind of manage their squad pretty well for those games, I would imagine. Liverpool.
Yeah, you would think that Liverpool probably don't feel as if they need the League Cup, so they might rest some players for that one. I mean, that's a tough set of fixtures when you consider that the easier one is going to be Sunderland away.
Away to Sunderland, yeah.
Not going to be easy at all. In fact, it's going to be extremely hard. It'll be a tough physical battle for reasons that we were talking about earlier on. Lyon at home, if anything, conceivably is a game where they could, believe it or not, I think with respect to Ligue 1, they might actually do with resting some. If they can get a good result at Fiorentina, which is a fairly big if, then the Lyon game, maybe they might be able to rest. But because I'm not quite certain that Lyon are in the same class as Liverpool, but that may just be chauvinism. You'll know more, Chris, because you're the French football expert. What do you think about that game? Do you think that's going to be a tough game for Liverpool?
Fairly tough. I mean, the Lyon aren't on bad form at all at the moment. They're sort of, you know, up near the top as you'd expect them to be in Ligue 1 at the moment. That'd be tricky. But you know, if anyone knows anything about French football, it should be Arsene Wenger. So you know, I expect him to sort of approach the game in the right way. But I think that'll be a tough one. Well, a tricky one for Arsenal. Let's put it that way.
Arsenal. Liverpool, you mean?
For Liverpool. Oh, sorry, yes, I'm getting... Yeah. Sorry, I'm on completely the wrong track. I do apologise. aside from Arsenal... sorry, Liverpool.
Nevertheless, Lyon are well-known throughout... They've played in many, many Champions League fixtures, aren't they? And they are regular fixtures and no pushovers. But I just feel... I'm just wondering whether or not, perhaps, that they're not quite the same... up to the same standard as Liverpool. But you know, having said that, there's three games between now and then, and you know, they could get softened up quite a lot by Fiorentina and Chelsea. And indeed Sunderland, so who knows where it would be. But yeah, I mean, the only respite there amongst that, in fairness, probably just looks like that Arsenal League Cup game, which could actually be quite an interesting and entertaining match if they do play both teams do play the younger players.
Sure, yeah. To tell you the truth, the reason I got sidetracked by Arsenal, I was just doing a bit of background research just to see how well Arsenal were doing, have done against Sunderland in the past. Just talking about that kind of match that's coming up, you know, probably about sort of 5-6 weeks or so. And I don't think Arsenal have won at Sunderland the last couple of times, or against Sunderland the last couple of times they've played, so that could be a tricky one. But just to go back and just sort of tidy up that, I mean, Liverpool against Lyon, yeah. I think Liverpool probably stand more chance of beating Lyon on current form, let's put it that way.
Yeah.
So yeah, just so I don't look a complete buffoon and not understanding who you're talking about. So there we go.
We could talk about Wigan, couldn't we, really? This would be a good time to talk about Wigan, I suppose.
Yes, indeed. Wigan, of course, beat Chelsea 3-1 at the weekend. A good result for them and a bit of a surprise. But, of course, it goes without saying that Chelsea had Cech sent off. Mm. Another one of those ones I found where basically he was sent off for supposedly tripping up. I can't remember who the attacker was on Wigan's team, but basically Cech sort of stuck out a trailing leg and was supposed to have made contact. But I found it was another one of those ones where the old replay wasn't entirely conclusive, and yet not too many people were really kind of making too much of an issue about it. So I'm guessing that it was as the referee saw it, and I don't think the referee was too far away from the incident either.
Who was it? Was it Rod Iega? Who was fouled.
I think it was, actually, yes.
The thing is that when that happens is that the player will always make a bit of a meal out of it just to illustrate to the referee what's taken place. And I think when you look at it and it looks like a little trip and he's fallen over like a sack of spuds, and you kind of think, well, you know, that seems to be a highly exaggerated chain, you know, sort of like sequence there, and it seems a shame to send him off on that. But it was a trip, and you'd probably say that he was probably the last man. I don't think the covering defenders would have made it back to the goal line.
No.
So, for me, I think it was a sending off. But I can kind of see why people would look at it and feel that it was soft. But I mean, I think that if it had been the other way around, Chelsea would have been quite vocal in their belief that the keeper would have been. But if it had been Chris Kirkland against Didier Drogba, it would have been a fairly similar sort of chain of events take place, and there would have been a very strong appeal on behalf of the Chelsea players that Kirkland be sent off. So
yeah,
I don't think Chelsea have got a great deal to complain about. But they will miss Cech, of course, because he's a great presence in there, and they'll have to deal with Hilario at the back there now. So it is a blow for them on many levels. I mean, in fairness, Wigan won that game fair and square.
Yes.
No question about it. The better team played extremely well. Different formation from the Arsenal game, and really responded really well. Good to see Roberto Martinez sort of start stamping his authority on that squad, because there was a concern after the Blackpool defeat in the Carling Cup that he was losing the dressing room. But it doesn't look like it. They seem to be they seem to be well up for it, and a great fillip for Wigan Athletic.
Absolutely, yes, that's right, and good result for them. Sort of derails Chelsea slightly, but Chelsea's still second in the table. That's their first defeat of the season, level on points with Manchester United at the top. And not much else to sort of report really from the Premier League, other than there was that excellent 5-0 win for Tottenham at the weekend, and also Gabriel Agbonlahor is on fine form at the moment. I think that's now 5 successive games that they scored in, so mental note there, put him in my fantasy league team.
Well, yes and no. I mean, the thing is, I mean, Agbonlahor, I think he's streaky. I think he will go 5-6 games and score, and then he'll probably go 12 and not score.
He's one of those players, isn't he? He's like feast or famine, really.
Yeah, that worries me about Agbonlahor. But nevertheless, I mean, big him up. It's a fantastic run, and if it continues, then Villa are going to own for a fantastic season. I'm just a bit worried that he's a bit streaky.
Yeah, I mean, he's certainly given Villa the boost they need, although they lost at the weekend 2-1 to Blackburn. But he's certainly the recent good run of form for Villa has been based on some of his goals. So no bad thing there if you're a Villa fan. And the only sort of major player in the Premier League that we can't really talk about is Manchester City, and that's because they're playing this evening after we record this podcast against West Ham, which I'm sorry to say, as a West Ham fan, looks like it's just going to kind of end in tears once again. Sadly, West Ham in the bottom three at the moment, which is perhaps slightly false in the sense that West Ham have got at least one, if not two, games in hand on all the other teams, but West Ham not playing too well at the moment, and history suggests, and all the other sort of statistics and everything suggest, that I think it's going to go Manchester City's way tonight, if for no other reason that Man City are just a better team than West Ham, and Bellamy's often good for scoring against his old team, so I mean I could go on, but
most people who are listening to this will have seen that match, so unless you want to make a prediction.
On behalf of some people on the pitch, have set up an I Know the Score League, which you can find details on if you go to Some People on the Pitch. And in that competition, I have predicted, and I'm almost ashamed to say it in case there are any other West Ham fans listening in, but I'm predicting 3-0 to Man City, can you believe?
3-0 to Man City, yeah. Okay, well, I'm going to go 3-1. I think West Ham are going to score.
Oh, well. I'm not quite sure what to make of that. You're either brave or stupid, but there we are. Never mind. Hopefully. But I can't see them getting anywhere near Man City tonight, so it could be carnage. So there we go. The only other thing to mention is that it's another big week in Europe this week. The old Champions League and Europa League. Oh, I keep saying Europa League. Must try and get that sorted out for next time. Lots of big games coming up this week in the Champions League. Bayern against Juventus.
Yes.
Man United against Wolfsburg. Of course, English versus German champions, which should be good. Quick synopsis of that one, Terry?
That'll be a good game. I think that's going to be a good game. I think, all being well, Wolfsburg forward line will be there. Both defences are a little bit leaky at the moment, so I think Man United are going to win, but I think it could be a multi-goal nonsense going on there. I think they could be 3-2 to Manchester United, I reckon.
Okay, well, let's hope that's the case. That should be a good one worth watching if that's the case. Real Madrid against Marseille. I thought Marseille put up a good fight, actually, in their last match against Milan. They lost 2-1 in the end, but put up a good show there. So should be another good one, although I expect Real Madrid to win out in there.
I agree.
As we've mentioned, Liverpool away to Fiorentina. And then in Europa League, switching to that, a few good games there as well. Werder Bremen against Athletic Bilbao. Bilbao made a good start to the season because they usually sort of they languish in the middle of La Liga, if not sort of bottom half. But they started off with a good run in the first few games of the season, albeit against slightly weak opposition. And it's all started to crumble a bit, as perhaps some people would predict, and I, dare I say, predicted as well. And they face a Werder Bremen team who are on what sort of form, would you say, Terry?
Reasonable form. They had a good result at the weekend. Mesut Ozil has been away for a few weeks, but I think he was back at the weekend. And if he's playing this week, then they'll kind of should be back to full strength. But they're always good. They had a terrible result against Leverkusen the week before, a 0-0 draw. Well, actually, Leverkusen a second, so it wasn't a terrible result, but it was an awful game. This was a slightly they've had a better time of it this time around, and I think it was Frankfurt that they beat, which is a good result for them. So, assuming that they've got a full complement of players with them, then it was Mainz. I apologise. They beat Mainz 3-0. So, assuming that they've got Ozil back, then that could be a good fixture. I reckon that's the tie of the round. That and what was the other one? Valencia versus Genoa, which is being screened on the TV here in Europe, which I think is well. I know that Spanish and Italian leagues can sometimes not take the Europa League or the UEFA Cup too seriously, but that could be a good game. Looking forward
indeed
to that.
Yes, Celtic playing Rapid Vienna, and Fulham are at home to Basel. Some good matches there to watch, I think, coming up this week in Europe.
Yeah, we didn't mention Arsenal versus Olympiakos, Chris.
Arsenal versus Olympiakos in the old Champions League.
I think that's going to be a difficult one. Olympiakos haven't lost a game all season, and that includes four Champions League qualifiers. So that will not be an easy win for Arsenal. I think they will win, but it'll be a tough fixture, that one.
Yes, indeed. Arsenal usually pretty reliable, pretty sound in Europe anyway. Last few years, so
totally. No, I mean it's a home win, but it'll be a difficult night for them.
Yes, indeed. Okay, well that's pretty much rounded up the European scene, as it were, for this week, and I reckon that's pretty much rounded up this week's podcast as well. As usual, you know where you can find us. There's our website, soundoffootball.blogspot.com. We've mentioned the email address. Look for us on Twitter. There's myself, at Chris Oakley. Terry is at Red Duffman. At Graham Sibley, if you want to send him a message and ask him when he's ever going to appear on this podcast ever again, feel free to do that. I'm sure he'll reply in the nicest possible language. Let us know what you think. If there's anything you want to discuss on the podcast, feel free to let us know and we'll try and accommodate your wishes as best we can. I reckon that's it for this week on Sound of Football. Join us again next week. For now, from myself and from Terry, it's goodbye.
Goodbye.